Ready? Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. David Wallen for the appellant, Dennis Devona. Your Honor, 11 jurors unanimously determined that a partnership existed under Rhode Island law from 1997 to 2011. The District Court erred in overturning that verdict by reweighing the evidence and not being faithful to the totality of the circumstances test under Rhode Island law. Under this Court's de novo review, we're asking that the jury verdict be reinstated. Now, the District Court did agree with the jury in one respect. It agreed that there was a partnership from 1997 to March or April of 1999.
Partnership for a specific purpose, limited in duration.
It was for
not a partnership at will.
It was not a partnership at will, Your Honor. It was for a specific purpose, which was to develop and sell a medical device business.
And generally for a limited duration.
Well, this wasn't for a limited duration necessarily. The goal here was to sell this business, develop and sell this medical device business.
As soon as possible.
Right. The plan was.
Certainly they wanted to do so when they had a medical device or devices that were worth selling. What they wanted to do was increase the value of this business. And remember, Your Honor.
No, well, what they wanted to do more specifically, maybe I'm wrong, but I think the plan was that they would get someone to produce these devices. They would then be able to sell it pretty soon for a substantial profit.
Originally, that's correct. What they wanted to do was to have an outside manufacturer manufacture this product.
Wait, time out. On page 245 of the record, it's my understanding that Mr. Devona testified that the purpose of the original partnership between himself and Mr. Zeitzel was to develop the instrument, obtain intellectual property on it, and sell the intellectual property as soon as possible, not to obtain an outside manufacturer, mass produce the product, and then sell the whole business. They were doing, which is not uncommon, coming up with a good idea, getting intellectual property on it, and then selling the intellectual property. Am I wrong about the record?
Judge, on page 340 and 333, what was represented by Dr. Zeitel was that this was a partnership, an umbrella partnership, that originally started out where they were going to, develop these glottoscopes, but then, and have it manufactured by an outside manufacturer.
I'm on page 340 and 341. What can you show me, direct me exactly to what you'd like me to look at?
So, Judge, if 340, it is...
Didn't change the underlying relationship. It's line 13 and 14, right?
Exactly, Your Honor. This is Dr. Zeitel telling Mr. Devona. He said it doesn't change our underlying relationship. Now, we're talking about the time frame in 1999 when the parties had, when Dr. Zeitel had created Endocraft, and there was this
sales agreement.
Exactly, Your Honor. He said, and this is what the jury was entitled to believe, was that the umbrella of the partnership is still there, and that whatever we make and sell this stuff is going to be, that's when we are going to end it. Question.
He said that two times, and there are two pieces of testimony that say essentially the same
thing. Your Honor. Exactly.
And then there's a corroboration from the other gentleman.
That's right. So that's right, Your Honor. Stephen Fusco heard Dr. Zeitel.
After the creation of Endocraft and the agreement.
Exactly, Your Honor. The jury could determine based upon, again, we're talking about a jury verdict, and all inferences and all evidence are supposed to be.
After Fusco's statement was after the creation was. Fusco said, I heard the doctor say, well, at the end, he's going to get $1 million when we sell it.
Exactly, Your Honor. Exactly.
Which is testimony in support of the notion that an umbrella partnership to have an end-game selling it was still alive.
Exactly, Your Honor.
I'm sorry. Let me make sure. I just want to understand this testimony you pointed me to on 340 because it's different from what I was saying. What I was saying, as the testimony on 245 indicates, is that the original partnership, which began in 1997, was for the purpose of developing the instrument and selling the intellectual property as soon as possible. I was simply distinguishing that from what later turned out to be the determination by the gentleman and the formation of Endocraft, which was then to develop the product themselves and sell it. It seemed to me that the testimony indicated at the outset in 97 they had a different goal than the goal that they then began in 99.
Judge,
am I wrong?
I disagree with Your Honor. What I'm saying, Your Honor, and what I'm pointing to on 333 and 340, and it's in other places, Your Honor, that the goal had always been to develop this business, not just to develop a particular product and just to sell the intellectual product property. The goal at the very beginning, as Judge Clevenger pointed out,
was what about on 245, where they say the goal was to develop a surgical instrument or surgical instruments that we could sell the intellectual property of the highest bidder as soon as we could?
Yes, Judge, that was part of it, but that wasn't the only goal. And keep in mind, Your Honor.
Yeah, I understand, but for purposes of appellate review, we have the judge's finding on the JMAL that there was a partnership from the beginning for a restricted purpose.
For a particular purpose.
For the particular purpose.
Correct, which was to create this business. And, that is in and, Judge
and
Talwani's
decision. We can't go behind that. And the question, as I understood it from the district court judge, was that there was a shift of gears in 99 reflected by the creation of Endocraft and the sales relationship with your client, and that sufficiently shifted the gears to have terminated the partnership that previously existed.
No, Your Honor, it did not. It did not do that. That's
no, but that's her theory.
Yeah, that's her theory. You're correct.
And your argument is, how can that theory work when there is testimony from Zeitel's, confirmed by Fusco, that the original partnership, whatever it was for, continued after those events?
Exactly.
Could just sort of clarify, there's not testimony from Dr. Zeitel that the partnership continued. There's testimony, which the district court felt compelled to credit under her standard of review, that Dr. Zeitel made the statement to Dr. DeVoe.
Well, that's correct, but Judge,
right.
That's correct. Judge, keep in mind that this was a jury, we're coming from up here from a jury verdict that's been reversed, right? So credibility was a big issue for this jury. And Dr. Zeitel testified, Your Honor, that there never was a partnership from the beginning, right, that the statement that to Mr. Fusco never occurred. But the jury is entitled, after a 9-day trial, going through a ton of evidence, to reach the opposite conclusion.
But here's the problem. I mean, you've stood up here now for nearly 8 minutes, and you have not at all contended with the ISRA, which is your biggest impediment of the case. You don't do yourself a service by standing here as the appellant and telling me about the things that are good for your case, but ignoring the things that are bad for your case. In 1999, your client signed a contract agreeing that he was simply an independent contractor and not a partner. So what does it matter if on page 340 he says, well, yes, I signed the contract, and yes, the contract says exactly that in no uncertain terms, and yes, I sent an email recognizing that that's what concerned me about the contract. But even though I signed it, Dr. Zeitel told me it didn't really mean anything. What the heck? I mean, why does that mean there's still a partnership when your client signed a document saying he understands there is not a partnership and he's only an independent contractor?
Okay, so there's two things I want to address. First is what the standard that the district judge is supposed to apply. The standard is that the evidence has to be so strongly and overwhelmingly inconsistent with the verdict that no reasonable jury could have returned it, because the jury ruled in Mr. DeVona's favor. So that's the standard that the district judge was supposed to apply, and on de novo review, that this court applies. It's not whether...
But there's a legal document.
All right, well, let me address that.
Deal with the document.
Doesn't Rhode Island law clearly say that you can be a partner and employee at the same time?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
But the document doesn't just say you're an employee. The document says you're not a partner. There's a difference.
Well, but it says that they're not a partner. He's not a partner in Endocraft. It does not say that he isn't that this umbrella partnership doesn't exist. In fact, the jury was entitled to conclude, based on the evidence, that this umbrella partnership existed.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're talking about. It's my understanding that the assets that he now wants 40% of were related to the sale and elimination of Endocraft. Am I not right?
No, this was the damages that the jury awarded were damages for profits that were not provided to him.
Related to Endocraft.
It was of the partnership.
You can't have this ethereal partnership. We're partners. What this ethereal partnership pertains to, there is a company. That company is Endocraft. There is a document that you signed saying, I'm not a partner of Endocraft. So how is it that you think you can claim 40% of the profits from Endocraft as a partner?
Let me start with the sales agreement, Your Honor.
Look, your client might have gotten schnookered. And maybe this other guy's not a good guy. I can't make those kinds of determinations. And maybe the jury did.
Right.
But he signed a document, a legal document, saying he understood he was not a partner.
But let's go to what the evidence actually said that was before the jury. And
that is the evidence that was before the jury.
But was also that the jury could credit was that Dr. Zeitels told Mr. DeVona that he would never enforce that sales agreement. The jury was
as to certain provisions, right?
As to it all. And in fact, the evidence was in the record, Your Honors, that it wasn't complied with. He didn't get paid under the ISRA.
No, sometimes Dr. Zeitels paid him more than he had to. But the more that he had to, like the $50,000 payment or the $75,000 payment, absolutely do not key to 40% of the profitability of the business, because the years in which he received those extra payments, the business was in fact unprofitable. So rather than that being an indication of his partner status, to me it's an indication of his employee status. You know, my husband's a partner. The firm doesn't make money, we don't get paid, right? The firm doesn't say, oh yes, but we're going to pay you anyway. But they do that with their employees. The employees get paid anyway. The employees get bonuses even. But partners don't.
Excuse me. But Judge,
I thought that the jury heard evidence that there was this umbrella partnership and that the business of the partnership was going to be conducted through Endocraft.
Exactly, Your Honor. That's exactly right.
My understanding of partnership law, that people do that all the time. They have an overarching partnership and they choose to use some instrument, whether it's a sole proprietorship or some other instrumentality, to achieve the purposes of the partnership.
You're absolutely right, Judge, and that's what Rhode Island law says. And the jury was entitled to reach that conclusion. Now, Judge Moore, if you were on the jury, certainly you are entitled to have reached a different conclusion based upon your common sense, your experience, whatever it might be. But, Your Honor, with all due respect, you're not on the jury. Okay, so the standard is completely different here. The jury, after a 9-day trial, after hearing a lot of evidence and considering counterclaims and co-inventorship issues and partnership issues.
But none of that has anything to do with was he a partner or not. There's a legal document that he signed saying he was not. He sent an email expressing his own concern about the fact, hey, wait a minute, this document says I'm not a partner. And then he signed it anyway. As a matter of law, I don't see how his later testimony, but Zeitel told me he wouldn't enforce it against me.
I don't see how
that overcomes the document and the evidence.
Excuse me. Sorry, Your Honor.
That's okay. Go ahead.
The evidence is not just that I won't enforce that representative agreement, but that our existing umbrella partnership that pre-existed Endocraft by 2 years continues unabated, and that Endocraft is merely the vehicle through which we will carry out our umbrella partnership goals.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, the argument that Judge Moore has made forcefully that the agreement was the sole and thorough expression of the relationship between your client and the circumstances, that was pitched to the jury by your adversary.
Absolutely, and they rejected it.
And they rejected it. So they heard that argument, and they could have believed it, but they obviously didn't, because if they believed it, they couldn't have done it.
You're absolutely right, Judge.
But in fact, doesn't the document say that? Doesn't the document say that it is the complete and utter agreement between the parties and that nothing else?
It says between Endocraft and my client, not between Dr. Zeitels and my client, and that's the key distinction.
I don't understand Endocraft is the only thing for which damages can be sought. There are no damages that your client is seeking outside of the sale.
I disagree with Your Honor. The jury heard complicated damages testimony and concluded that the value of the partnership was the enterprise value was worth something. And secondly, that the lost profits during the lifetime of this partnership, also he was entitled to 40% of that.
Were the damages predicated on anything other than Endocraft and the partnership being one and the same?
Well, Judge, the expert obviously had to have some information, and he used Endocraft information, but in coming up with the damages calculations, he valued the partnership, a component of which was certainly Endocraft.
Because not a component, it's an entirety. The two were equivalent, one and the same.
Well,
anything beyond the Endocraft financial situation that was factored into the damages ascribed to the partnership?
No, I don't believe so, Judge.
Okay, under the calculation, the partnership and Endocraft were one and the same.
For purposes of damages, that's correct.
Didn't the jury hear testimony that the reason for creation of the corporation was Dr. Zeitel's wanted to have it for either shielding personal liability or other reasons?
That's exactly right.
It wasn't as if you need the corporation to carry out the purposes of the partnership. There was jury could have heard that the reason for the corporation was for that reason. So in essence, the corporation and the partnership are the same in their mind.
Right, exactly.
Just so you know, the other side knows where I'm coming from as well. The thing that concerns me is that the case wasn't tried on a shifting gears theory. Jury didn't hear any testimony at all about the nature of the partnership changing from the other side saying it.
Correct.
You put in I saw three pieces of testimony, two from what your client said, the other Fusco, all seemed clearly after the events that the judge felt broke it all.
Right, exactly.
Are supportive of the fact that it didn't break it all. So, and then when the judge says in her opinion, I accord those statements, the three I'm talking about, full weight, not some weight, not a little bit of weight, but full weight. So what I can't understand is how you can give full weight to those three factors and still conclude that the creation of the corporation and the agreement killed it all.
Right,
where Rhode Island law clearly allows you to run a partnership through a corporation. And the sales agreement was between Endocraft and the employee, and the law doesn't preclude you from being an employee and a partner.
That's right, Judge. And I think what she – I know my time is up, Your Honor. I could just answer Judge Clevenger's question.
Oh, I just say one other thing.
Sure.
That troubled me, although it's not a piece of your appeal, the shifting of gears shows up very late in the game. It doesn't appear in the 50A motion or the memorandum in support of the 50A. It doesn't show up in the 50B motion. It shows up in the memorandum in support of the 50B motion.
Well, Judge,
late in the game.
Well, that's right. That's right. I just wanted to go back to your previous point, which is it seemed to us, Your Honor, that the district judge, took that favorable quote, favorable to the jury verdict, put it aside and said, let's look at each individual piece of evidence to see if it fits into a partnership. She took each piece, said no, without looking at the totality of the
circuit. It doesn't fit any better after 99 than before. What went on after 99, unless you believe the formation of the corporation and the agreement were game changers, the same was true. The doctor was paying all the money and Zeitel's was doing all the work.
Exactly, and that's appropriate under partnership law in Rhode Island.
And can I just understand your theory here? So under your theory, you've got two different entities, an umbrella partnership.
Correct.
And then Endocraft.
Correct.
And is it your view that the umbrella partnership owns the entirety of Endocraft?
Yes, it's an asset. I would characterize it as an asset of the umbrella,
but the only asset. So they're one and the same in your view.
Yes, at that point. But keep in mind what they testified to was that Endocraft was the vehicle to achieve the partnership objectives, which didn't change from 1997 to 2011.
And but wait, from 97 to 99, there was no other entity.
You're right. I'm sorry. I misspoke. From 1999 to 2011. But the umbrella partnership existed from 1997 to 2011. And under Rhode Island law, a continuation of a business by a partner is prima facie evidence that the partnership continues. So even though there's this, quote, switching gears, the only thing that happened there was they went from an outside manufacturer to Dennis DeVona spending most of his time overseeing the manufacturer.
Well, that's
sales.
Not the only thing that happened. They went into business. They created a different business. He signed the agreement that Judge Moore highlighted repeatedly.
Well,
they signed the agreement. They operated in a way that does not suggest that there was any partnership whatsoever. We've got 99 to 2000, how many years?
11.
Okay. And, the testimony we've talked about was all around the period of the change. But after 99, we've got the agreement.
Which was not enforced. And Dr. Zeitels told Dennis DeVona he would not enforce it. And in fact, he never did. He didn't even abide by it.
But you've got an entity that was operating. And it was
correct.
Operating with Mr. Zeitel being listed on all the documents as the sole owner and the sole person in charge, right? And checks and all of this stuff being done as if it was operated and he was the sole
No, Judge. Dennis DeVona guaranteed the credit card debt. Dennis DeVona agreed to share losses. They held Dennis DeVona out to third parties as a partner. As Judge Clevenger said, Endocraft was really formed just to protect Dr. Zeitels from product liability. I mean, it's very common for a partnership to create an underlying entity to protect themselves from product liability or other types of liability.
But why would it be just Dr. Zeitel and not Mr. DeVona also as part of that?
Because Dr. Zeitel did it first. He was the one that created Endocraft. He did it without consulting originally with Dennis DeVona. But there's a lot of evidence that, in fact, the partnership continued. Dennis DeVona was doing all the work. And the jury, again, I respectfully ask the court to keep in mind what the standard is here. The standard is that no reasonable jury could have reached the conclusion that it did. That's the standard that this court has to apply de novo. It's not that you would decide differently as a jury. It's could a reasonable jury have reached this conclusion? And sure, there may be some evidence that favors Dr. Zeitel.
The judge realized on the summary judgment, saying this case is going to go to trial, the evidence of the partnership may be thin, which we can all agree. I mean, it's thin. But the question is it there? And on the JMAL, the judge says the jury was correct in finding that there was an original partnership for a specific purpose that at least lasted till 99. And so then the question is, are the circumstances after 99 sufficiently different to say that that partnership was collapsed?
And there's no evidence, and no one testified that it dissolved. Dr. DeVona.
Well, that's partly because your adversary chose to put its eggs in the no partnership at all
correct.
Basket.
That's correct.
And as a matter of fact, they lead off their red brief by saying even the district court found there was no partnership, which is, of course, incorrect.
It is incorrect.
The ships passed, what we're hearing now were ships that never passed each other at trial.
May I?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. The timeline here is absolutely crucial, and the Fusco statement, Your Honor, was not after the formation of Endocraft. The testimony here...
He testified that it was late 99 or 2000?
No, what he testified, Your Honor, and this is at page 595 in the appendix, he was asked when that statement was made. Had to have been sometime in late 1998. That's months before the formation.
He clarified himself later.
But he did not. Your best recollection is late 1998, in that range, yes, sir. And then he was asked later.
95, you said? Page 595?
595. And then at page 602, he says late range. 90s, early 2000, in that range. He never said that it took place after the... He never said in any non-speculative manner that it took place after the formation of Endocraft. I know the plaintiffs argue that you're allowed to draw an inference that maybe it was after, but if we were here on a, for example, statute of limitations case, And the plaintiff said, I was hurt sometime in the three-year range, and part of the range was outside the limitations period, and part was in, was within.
I do believe he said late 1999 to 2000.
He did not, Your Honor.
Nowhere?
Nowhere. You can look at page 595, where he says his best recollection is 98, and you can look at page 602, where he says late 90s, not late 1999. So it's actually, it's been troubling that we've heard
If I'm wrong, I apologize, but I thought I'd read the entire record.
Right, so that was before the formation of EndoCraft, and then the other two statements.
It had to be somewhere in the late 90s. Early 2000, in that range.
That's page 602, and yeah. Page 595, his best memory was 1998.
Yeah, but that's what he said, late 90s,
right.
early 2002.
And if
so
EndoCraft...
the jury could infer, right?
They could not infer, Your Honor. The late 90s, I would say, starts 98, which is what he said his best memory was.
Early 2000, if it's up to early 2000, the events we're talking about are like early to mid-1999.
And that's speculation, Your Honor. If the witness isn't himself sure when it was, and he gives a range, and much of the range is outside the relevant period, a jury cannot infer.
This was cumulative evidence to the two pieces of testimony that said the umbrella partnership continues. So,
and so those other,
if the jury hears it, it's cumulative.
And those other pieces, well, no,
the jury did hear Fusco saying that it was possibly the 2000.
It is not cumulative, Your Honor. The fact that a conversation may have occurred between
the two. To the point that the partnership was continuing.
It's not, Your Honor. It really isn't, because his best memory was that it was 1998, and even when he gave a broader
the subject
range,
matter was.
The other statements as well, Your Honor. To the point of signing
you
of the
ISR. You agree that your first statement in your brief is incorrect. I just want to be clear about that on page one.
Well, what the trial court found, Your Honor, was that there was not a partnership after 1998.
Found no partnership existed between the parties. That's what you say on line three.
Well, I guess what we meant, Your Honor, was starting in April of 1999.
No. It says here they found no partnership. The judge found a partnership up to 99.
Up through April of 1999.
So this statement is incorrect.
That may be incorrect.
Okay, fine.
I mean, for purposes.
What about the statement that we were talking about early on page, 345, where she credited, and as Judge Clevenger pointed out, absolutely credited the fact that this statement, Dr. Zeidel made this statement to Devona. So are we supposed to say, well, he made it and he was lying?
So, Your Honor, that statement was prior to the signing of the ISRA. And as Judge Moore has pointed out, the ISRA, the Sales Representative Agreement, has an integration clause.
These statements were prior to the signing of the ISRA?
They were prior to the signing of the ISRA. The ISRA was signed in June of 1999. These statements were made in May. So there was a conversation which occurs in May. Supposedly, the statement is made. And then the following month, the plaintiff signs an agreement, which has an integration clause, with Dr. Zeitels, who is the sole member of the LLC, concerning exactly the same subject matter, which says we are not partners. So under, and I know they make an argument that we've waived the parole evidence rule. However, under the parole evidence rule, clearly the later written document concerning the identical subject matter governs.
What they're saying is that we are not, maybe we're not partners in EndoCraft, but that doesn't dislodge the umbrella partnership that.
First let me address the preservation point.
Be a partner employee at the same time.
Not really, Your Honor. We cite case law here, and the law is clear. I think there's not actually a dispute between the parties as to how the law works. You can be both partners and an employee. However, if you're going to proceed that way, then you need to hold yourself out to third parties that way, have a relationship so that the third parties know that you're partners.
He continues to call himself a partner.
He does not, Your Honor. So, for example, the ACT medical statement is also before the formation of EndoCraft and the signing of the ISRA. After the formation of EndoCraft and the ISRA are signed, there is literally no statement whatsoever. And there's no testimony that any statement
referred
was ever
made. He said that there were statements made by Devona holding himself out, or that they held himself out as a partner.
And that's actually not correct, Your Honor. The timeline here is crucial. The ACT statement was before him. That was in April. Right? EndoCraft created in late April. ISRA signed in June. The statement he's referring to was made in earlier April. Once you get past the signing of the ISRA, there are no partnership statements. What you have instead, so for example, if you look at page 1249 in the appendix, this is an email that Mr. Devona sent to a customer. He refers to Dr. Zeitels as his boss in writing. When you look at that May letter that your honors have been referring to, this is a letter which talks about our business arrangement. It goes on at length about our business arrangement. This is in between the formation of EndoCraft and the signing of the ISRA. There's not a single mention there of the existence of any kind of
partnership. That's one piece of testimony. What my trouble was, I don't understand what full weight means other than full weight. And if the full weight is the partnership continued, notwithstanding things afterwards.
And so ultimately, Your Honor, the question...
Then can a juror understand the full weight, meaning that events after 1999 didn't change anything?
And so ultimately, whether there's a partnership is a question of law, right? It goes to the jury for the jury to resolve disputed facts, but it's a question of law. The trial court gave full weight to those statements, but ultimately applying the factors for the determination of whether there's a partnership, which were set forth in the First Circuit Celtex decision, concluded that even assuming that statement was made, when you consider all the different factors which go into determining whether there's a partnership as a matter of law, there was no partnership here after April of 1999. So, for example, when you look at the cases...
But the reasons why are describing the way in which the partnership functioned before. I can't think, other than the creation of EndoCraft and the agreement, which those are clear, it seems to me that the operation, the relationship between the two people is the same as before. Zeitel's putting all the money in and Devona doing all the work on the project.
But those are very important factors, Your Honor. And some factors existed later that could not have existed before. So courts place an awful lot of weight, for example, on whether there's a partnership tax return. There was no income in the 97-98 period, so there was no need to file a tax return.
Is that right?
They didn't sell anything until starting in 1999. Once there was income and it started showing up on taxes, there was no partnership tax return. Dr. Zeitels claimed all of the income himself and paid taxes on all of the income himself throughout that period. When you look at cases like Celtex or TG Plastics or the other various cases, they all place an awful lot of weight on whether the partners told tax authorities that they were partners. That wasn't the case here. Courts look at whether the business was conducted in the partnership's name. This was conducted in the name of EndoCraft.
Right, but I mean, the cases also show that the fact that you didn't file a partnership return doesn't necessarily mean there wasn't a partnership. It's a totality of circumstances type test.
It is, Your Honor.
So each one of these factors adds in. And you had a jury that, as I say, the thing that troubles me is that the district court was being very honest, but they say there is obviously testimony here in the record to the effect that the partnership continued.
And
she credits the partnership with existing.
She credits that there was a partnership during a period where the only plan was to work together for about a year, come up with a device, and sell off the intellectual property for somebody else.
The goal was to have a business and sell it.
To have a business and sell it. But his testimony, and Judge Moore was looking at page 245, and you can look at multiple places in the record where Mr. Devona testified about what the original plan was, what they discussed in 1997.
Yeah, but her whole point wasn't that the underlying sort of nature shifted, but it comes to an end.
It did come to an end. Their original plan, and this is what he testified repeatedly, page 245, page 360, page 415, in the appendix, the plan was to come up with a device and sell off the device, sell off the business within about a year. He said at page, this is at page 415, right after the switching gears testimony. We thought it would take about 12 to 14 months and maybe cost $70,000. And then we realized that wouldn't work. This is now page 414, the switching gears conversation testimony.
And when did that take place?
This took place right after the ACT medical meeting, before the formation of EndoCraft and before the signing of the ISRA. So we realized that our original plan, which was just to work together for about a year to create this device and sell it off, wasn't going to work. So we switched gears. And how did they switch gears? A week later, Dr. Zeitels goes out and, without even talking about it with Mr. Devona, creates EndoCraft and makes himself the sole member of the company. He then has Mr. Devona's longtime family lawyer It was Mr. DeBona's longtime family lawyer who drafted up the independent sales representative agreement. And the question was put to Mr. DeBona, did you ever tell your family lawyer that you guys were partners when he was drafting these things up? And the answer was no. That's at page 426 in the appendix. So then the ISRA signed, and Mr. DeBona reads it and sends that email, or fax at that point, to Dr. Zeitel saying, I have a lot of concerns with this. I thought when I saw this that maybe you didn't want to go forward and do business with me. This is the letter at pages 1173 to 76 in the appendix. I hope you'll spare me the guesswork. If you've already decided I don't belong in this project, I knew if I didn't sign the ISRA, it would be the end of business between us. These are not statements made by someone who thinks he still has an ongoing umbrella partnership. These are statements made by somebody who realizes that their original plan has ended, and now there's a different phase in their relationship.
Here's what's bothering me about the case, and I don't quite know what to do about it. Maybe there's nothing I can do about it. Is your friend made a lot of comments about deferring to the jury. It seems to me that one of the things that might have happened to the jury here was because the only position you were taking was there was never any partnership at all. And once they reached it, and there was plenty, which even the judge concluded, that there was a partnership in the first 2 years, they just kind of ended it. You hadn't presented to the jury, but even if you conclude that there was a partnership in the first 2 years, you also have to conclude, based on the evidence, that things changed in 99. That was never presented. That theory would have been presented by you, and that was never presented. So once the jury gets it, and if they're 100% sure that there was a partnership in 97, what were they to do? And if that's correct, then I don't know what we do with that, under a new theory, that we introduce a new theory at this stage and evaluate the jury's verdict under that new theory.
So that, Your Honor, I'm not going to comment on the quality of closing argument. What I will say, though, is that ultimately the question whether there's a partnership is a question of law.
Can I just ask you, I know it's a question of law with underlying facts, and it often turns on the facts that under Rhode Island law you have to give it to a jury, even though it's a question of law. I have cases right here in front of me because I asked my law clerk to pull them up when you said it was a question of law. So, but isn't there an underlying thing that both, I think multiple people have stated that the jury found there was a partnership in 97-99 and that the judge also found there was. I'm reading the judge's opinion on A6 and A7, and she says a jury could thus have found there was a partnership from 97 to 99. I don't see any statement in her opinion in which she agrees that there was. She just says, giving deference, a jury could have found a partnership existed during this period, but they could not have found one existed thereafter. I may be wrong on the facts. Am I wrong?
I think you're right, Your Honor. Ultimately, it doesn't matter, though, because
I know you think it doesn't matter, but there is a difference between a jury finding something and the judge saying, well, under the standard of review, I can't reverse it. That's different from a judge saying, and I agree with it.
That's correct, Your Honor. I will note that the question of dissolution of a partnership is governed by Rhode Island statute, and so this is section 712.
Right, your direct verdict was saying there never wasn't a partnership at all.
Yes, well, and that remains our view, that there was never a partnership at all.
She rejected that argument.
Well, she did, but she
agreed
with us.
She agreed with you that the jury could never have found there was any partnership at all. She wouldn't have said the jury could have found.
She ultimately agreed with us, and that's why we're here as the appellee, not the appellant, that even if there were a partnership in the 97-98 period, for that limited purpose of trying to do something for 12 months and get paid quick, when the parties realized that wouldn't work, and they realized that if they wanted to make a go of this, they would have to work together for a long period of time and manufacture the device themselves, that at that point the partnership ended. There was a dissolution, and this is 712.42 of the Rhode Island statutes. Dissolution is caused without violation of the agreement between the partners by the termination of the definite term or particular undertaking specified in the agreement. And what did Mr. DeVona say the agreement was back in that 97-98 period? Again, it's 245 and 360 and 415. The agreement was just to work together for about a year and try and sell this thing off quickly.
And it was DeVona's testimony that we had to switch gears.
And we had to switch gears. That didn't work. And when they switched gears, with Dr. Zeitel's creating a company, hiring Mr. DeVona as effectively his employee or independent sales representative. and creating an LLC.
So the jury was supposed to understand when they heard that the umbrella partnership continued, it continued in a different form. That's what you're saying.
Well, that's certainly their argument.
But that's, nobody told them that.
I'm sorry, I
didn't. The argument, the testimony that supposedly the judge was giving full credit, full weight to, was that the umbrella, the original partnership, continued. And that's after the creation of Endocraft.
No, it was after the creation of Endocraft, before the signing of the ISRA with its integration clause. I want to make two further points.
But, I mean, there's that testimony.
On this, there is that testimony.
That's saying we don't think that purpose changed.
You can give weight to testimony by saying, yes, I will credit that testimony, that statement was made. But ultimately, the question is, what are the legal circumstances?
Full weight's different.
Full weight means...
Full weight seems to sound like it's pretty heavy.
It gets the full weight it deserves, but ultimately it's a question of law. And where a contract is signed with an integration clause a month later, which says we are not partners.
And the judge recognized that she was turning the case on a 50B argument that hadn't been made in 50A.
I don't believe the judge did.
If she'd looked, she would not.
Well, Your Honor, the 50A argument was always that there wasn't a partnership.
No, shifting gears. There was always an argument that there was no partnership at all.
Well, I think once we got the transcript and we saw that testimony, certainly we latched onto that testimony and emphasized it. But the position of Dr. Zeitel's had always been...
And changed the theory of the case.
Well, no, Your Honor. The theory had always been that once the ISRA was signed, at that point there was no longer a partnership. That had always been the theory.
And the jury rejected that argument.
They did, but ultimately...
You made that argument to the jury.
They rejected it, Your Honor, but ultimately the nature of a 50A, 50B argument is that the jury was wrong. And that when you look at the evidence... And apply the correct legal standard to it, a reasonable jury could not have reached the decision it did.
In a setting where Zeitel's had said that agreement isn't worth anything, doesn't mean anything.
Well, again, Your Honor, if every time
saying,
in
the context of what the jury was free to do, this is a kind of a messy case because on the one hand, you were arguing that the agreement totally changed everything. And yet your client testified that the agreement didn't make a difference at all to the relationship.
Well, our client didn't testify to that. Mr. Devona testified
But the jury was allowed to hear that.
They were.
And allowed to believe it.
But this is, no, Your Honor, this is exactly why we have a parole evidence rule.
No, but you're not on that. Parole evidence is not in the case.
It is in the case, Your Honor. I know they argued waiver in their reply brief. There's First Circuit precedent directly on point. And let me give you the site. It's Weber versus International Paper. 417 F3rd 229.
Well, so to exclude that evidence, we have to agree with you on the parallel evidence issue.
No, I think you have to apply the factors that the First Circuit laid out in Southax. And when you walk through those factors, did they conduct business in the name of the partnership? Was there a tax return? Were there capital accounts? Were there even partnership books? Was there an agreement to share losses? There was no testimony that there was an agreement to share losses here. What was the nature of their respective contributions? Dr. Zeitel provided all the capital, and the jury ultimately found that Dr. Zeitel
provided... That's not unusual in a partnership. One party provides the capital, and the other provides the elbow grease.
Well, again, it's a totality of the circumstances test. Mm-hmm. When you walk through all the factors, what you find is that all the factors
Sure, if I were a juror, I could agree with you entirely. Each of the factors you mentioned, but none of them are dispositive.
And it's a question of law, Your Honor. And I know my time's long. I'm past.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll be brief. I know you indulge us more than you probably were allowed. But just very quickly, what this comes down to is, could the jury, a reasonable jury, have reached this conclusion, or could no reasonable jury reach this conclusion? The answer is absolutely, based on this evidence, based on this record, they certainly could have reached this conclusion of this umbrella partnership for this entire period of time. At the end of the day, the jury did not believe Dr. Zeitel when he specifically said, no partnership, no discussion about Stephen Fusco. They just disagreed with him. And that's what the jury system is all about. And Dennis Devona was entitled to that jury. And what, and ultimately what the district, respectfully, what the district court did was invade the province of the jury. And I would just ask Your Honor again to look back at the standard of review here. The standard of review is very, very important. It's not whether, respectfully, Your Honors would, as jurors, reach a conclusion, but whether a reasonable jury could reach, no reasonable jury could reach a conclusion.
Do you agree that under Rhode Island law, whether a partnership exists is a question of law?
There are fundamental facts that have to,
There are underlying facts, of course, but do you agree that the ultimate question of whether a partnership exists is a question of law?
I actually believe that it is a fact finding. That's my understanding. I know Your Honor said that you
had some cases that
say it's a matter of law. I think in certain instances, when you're looking at, let's say, a contract, does a contract create a partnership? I do think that, yes, I agree with Your Honor, that a court can decide that as a matter of law. But ultimately...
No, I'm not asking whether a court can decide. A court can always decide something as a matter of law if there are no facts to the contrary. I'm asking you, under Rhode Island law, is the determination of whether a partnership exists between two parties a question of law or fact?
I do believe it's a mixed question because there has to be underlying fact-finding based on the totality of the circumstances, and then you're applying the law, the partnership standards that were instructed by the judge in this case, applying the law to the facts, and that's you reach a conclusion. Thank you.
We thank both sides. The case is submitted. That concludes our proceeding for this afternoon.
All right. Yeah.